Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Toy Run, the Star Wars Action Figure Cast.
Awesome, yeah!
Join the hosts, Chris B. from JediBusiness.com and Jake Stevens from ForLong2Zuckus.com.
I will freeze your body in carbonite forever, Han Solo!
Not so fast!
The action figures are still exceedingly important to me.
I'd rather have an action figure come out and be FIOPOA than to never get it.
Toy Run!
I've been collecting many years. I have lots of figures, and we can talk about all that.
As a kid, to go through a fresh case was unbelievable. I don't think I ever left a Gamorrean guard behind.
The thrill of the hunt. You know, I love that.
From the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon, you can control the galaxy.
Wow, what a week it's been, man. We've gotten so much cool new footage from Rogue One. There's a Japanese international trailer, there's a Korean one, and there's a whole bunch of TV spots. You know, it's amazing. I mean, we're less than 4 weeks away from Rogue One. I can't believe it, man.
Yeah, as of this recording, we're 1 month out. And those new, so many cool clips in those, not a lot, but the ones that they showed are really, really cool, which makes me very excited for Rogue One to see that we have a lot of stuff that maybe we didn't realize we were getting. I mean, just the fact that in one scene, X-Wing dive bombs a AT-AT. Oh my gosh, how cool is that?
Yeah.
And if X-Wings could resist Hoth temperature, would that have battle gone completely different? Or are these, do we think the AT-ATs from Empire were like upgrades that you couldn't just blow up from the air?
I don't know, but I know that X-Wing fighters have proton torpedoes, which snowspeeders don't, right?
That's true. And so why weren't those? Was it simply because it was too cold? But you can fly them out of the atmosphere, but you couldn't fly them, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we need more context. Maybe that AT-AT was already totally damaged beforehand or something, you know?
Very true. But man, such cool stuff. Also, more dive bombers. The space battle, it looks like it's going to be awesome. I don't quite know what's going on or what they're attacking in space, but the shots that they've shown are very, very cool.
Yeah, you know, my favorite shot that I've seen so far is K2SO going after some stormtroopers. I loved seeing that.
Oh, it's so very cool. You know, we haven't quite, you know, they're called, oh my gosh, what is it? He's not an assassin droid. He is a...
No, he's a security droid.
Security droid, thank you. But we haven't really seen him hold up to. I mean, the only other security droids we know of were the, was it the... green or the blue? No, blue were pilots. The red battle droids were security droids, and we know that they did not kick very much butt.
Yeah, very exciting. So the only thing that's missing now is tickets. We need to find out when tickets go on sale.
Oh my goodness. So I have an inside source, very, very reliable, works in a place that could potentially be, or actually does show the film. And this anonymous source could not give me the actual date, but they did confirm for me that we are still weeks out from tickets. So it's looking like, I've heard some murmurs around the web already, the end of November, and that looks like that's what we're getting.
Yeah, it's quite a different approach from The Force Awakens. But
oh, yeah,
last year, this time, we had the tickets.
Early to mid-October, we had tickets. So I think our buddy Jason over at Galaxy Toys, he mentioned that he thinks it might be because they're still kind of Disney, being the parent company, is still kind of latching on to some of that Doctor Strange advertisement. And so probably we'll start the campaign for Rogue One after that dies down a little bit.
Yeah, that's plausible to me. So a couple of more weeks and then we'll have some tickets. And before we know it, we'll have seen the movie. All right, so welcome to episode 36 of Toy Run, the Star Wars Action Figure Cast. My name is Chris B. I'm your host. And joining me as always is my good friend Jake Stevens. How you doing, Jake?
Just fine. I'm, you know, it's kind of a slow week for, you know, a lot of action figure content, which is good because it finally gives me some time to kind of play around and mess with the stuff that we've been collecting like crazy over the last, wow, the Rogue Friday seems like so long ago, but it wasn't really that long ago. But yeah, so I was just getting ready to actually, before the show, I didn't quite get time, but getting ready to open up my new 12-inch. I got the R2-D2 and the BB-8 from the end of the Force Awakens line finally showed up. I think we mentioned last show, and so I'm excited to finally actually unpackage those guys.
Very cool. Yeah, I can't wait to hear what you think of those.
Yeah, you know, this is the first time we're getting an astromech in this modern line, so I don't quite know what the proportions are just yet, but I know that the ones they did for, well, way back when they started this, you know, the 12-inch line with Hasbro, with the modern 12-inch, they looked pretty good. Now, this obviously doesn't have the chrome dome as they did back then, but it looks like it's going to be pretty good.
All right, so what's been going on the store shelves? I've noticed that new toys are trickling out little by little. I've got my hands on the Black Series Target exclusive 3-pack, which has the Death Trooper Specialist in it. It has an exclusive Cassian Andor action figure in it, and it has a re-release of Jyn Erso in it as well. Great looking set, unfortunately a little expensive. It's currently on sale for about $55, I think. But you do get one repacked figure, which kind of sucks. But the other two figures in this set are really, really nice.
Yeah, the nice thing about Target exclusives that when they come out, they're pretty darn plentiful. I know that my Target is sitting heavy on both their 6-inch 3-pack, the new 12-inch set that's out, multi-pack, as well as the 5POA 8-pack that they have. So large, large numbers of these show up. Now, don't assume they'll be on the store shelves forever, because Target likes to move their stock quickly. I mean, they order a lot of it and they put it out, but then kind of once it's gone, it's gone. So, but they are, at least mine was up until just a couple weeks ago, still holding on to last year's 2-pack exclusive, right, from The Force Awakens. Did you pick one of those up recently on clearance, Chris? Did you tell me that?
No, I have not found those on clearance yet, but I had a reader, a Jedi Business reader, contact me. Kendall Pope is his name. And he found those for $11 on clearance.
Yeah, I'm starting to go. The Poe and the... Who's in there with Poe?
FN2199.
That's right.
Traitor.
Riot Trooper.
So yeah, I haven't found those on clearance yet, but I think I only know one Target which has one single pack left. So I don't think that in my neighborhood, at least, that I'll be able to find those on clearance.
My Target's starting to shift some older stock to discount at the end of the aisle, kind of on the end cap there facing the game wall. Most Targets are roughly the same layout. So that's where I'm finding a lot of stuff. Now, my Target hasn't put that 2-pack there, but I have seen it at other Targets. So it's really a store-to-store basis, probably based on the stock that they have.
Now, another set that's out now is the Kohl's exclusive 3¾-inch 4-pack. The set has Rebel Commando Pow in it, which is a re-release of the Commander Pow figure that was included in the Versus 2-pack. The same goes for Maroff, which is also in this 4-pack. The two interesting figures here is the Stormtrooper with the white shoulder pauldron. The figure is identical to the one that was released in the Versus 2-pack, but it now has a white shoulder pauldron. And the most interesting figure is the Imperial Death Trooper included in the set, because it has a different paint application. It was a little dirtied up, and the paint application is different on the figure and on the accessory as well.
Now, you got a pretty good deal on this, right? I know it's not the best deal out there, but you got some discounts, yeah?
Yeah, I thought I got a good deal. I paid a little over $40, including shipping. Okay. But apparently, Kohl's lets you stack promo codes. So on Veterans Day, I saw that somebody scored it for $18. So I paid $40 for it. So yeah, no, I didn't get a good deal on it. But at least it wasn't full retail price, right? Because full retail is, I think, $50.
Yeah, I haven't picked it up yet, so it's probably where I'm going to be sitting. I don't go to many Kohl's, so I don't have any of that Kohl cash or anything like that. So unless I see another sale, that might be the price I'm getting it at.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not the most exciting set, but if you're a completist, I mean, there's two figures in there which you definitely want to pick up. I've also come across some of the remnants of Wave 2, of the Rogue One 3¾-inch figures of the basic assortment.
Don't talk about it. I'm still missing those three.
You're still missing those?
I'm still missing the short packs. They're just, I don't know why. Our Target, either someone cleaned them out or they're just not getting it. So, yeah.
I mean, the tough ones are Leia, Krennic, and Ray, and they're just one case. So, you know, all it takes is just one person to walk in there and just clear them out.
Yeah, but I don't even see the remnants. That's what I'm saying. I don't know what's happening at my target, but those figures aren't showing yet. But my good buddy John, and we'll hear about this in the Toy Rundown of the News, they actually appeared on Hasbro Toy Shop. So I do have them coming, but not just yet.
So last Friday on Veterans Day, I ended up going to Walmart, and I did find a single Death Trooper Specialist, the 3¾-inch exclusive, and a Jyn Erso.
Oh, really?
At Walmart, yes.
Very, very cool.
Yeah, just one of the Death Troopers, though. But you know what? I'm shocked that I actually found one of those. So
yeah, thankfully, you know, we have some pretty good friends. They picked up a set for us. But then my birthday, again, my buddy Jason got me a set for my birthday. So that was very, very cool. Good figures, good figures. We should review them next show.
So yeah, we'll do a review on the next show of some of the latest 3¾-inch figures. So talking about stuff being on the store shelves, now I haven't found it in the stores yet. I don't think anybody has yet, but it's popped up on eBay. And the next wave of 6-inch figures from the Black Series, which includes Darth Revan, looks like that wave is out already. Maybe not on the store shelves yet, but people have it in stock, selling it.
Are these American sellers?
Yeah, American sellers.
Hmm, interesting. So we have Princess Leia, AT-AT Driver, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Sabine Wren, Darth Revan, and Snowtrooper. I believe that's two waves, right?
That should be one wave.
That is one wave.
Yeah, that's six figures. So that's actually a case that's worth ordering.
You can order
a full case and get one of each.
Now as a non-completist on the 6-inch line, my target is Sabine, because I want to get all the Rebels characters, the realistic Rebels characters, because again, they haven't made realistic 3¾, so that's kind of what my focus in the 6-inch line is. And then I'm debating Princess Leia. I want to see her face-to-face since she's had such a tumultuous design phase.
Yeah, I think it'll be just fine. You know, I think it'll be just fine. I think there's just some people are just blowing it up. You know, I think the first version really did need some improvements made to it. And I think they did. And I think the version that I've seen now that's floating around online, at least those images, I think it looks just fine.
That's what I want to see. I want to get one in the hand and see if it looks as good as that second version is. If so, she'll probably go home with me.
Well, that's definitely going to be the hottest wave, I think, during this holiday season. That's going to be a tough one to find, especially once we have Black Friday and everybody's out holiday shopping. That's going to be a tough one to track down.
Yeah, you know, but this is the time of year, and this is insider pro tip Toy Run info, but this is the time of year where you go out if you're able at 11:30 at night, because that's when Walmart puts those pallets on the floor, and they put a lot of them out because they do a lot of business, love them or hate them. They do a lot of business. So as soon as you see some sightings of these at Walmart, then it should be on like Donkey Kong for those who can stay up late.
Now, the Walmart exclusive Scarif Stormtrooper and the 3-pack that they have, the 3¾-inch 3-pack, those have not been found yet, right?
No, I have not seen reports of those, but I so want that Scarif Trooper.
Now, Jake, you've sent me a link a couple of days ago of the Rogue One ILM XL Lab, which is this virtual reality video where you can look around. It's very similar to the Force Awakens one that came out last year.
Except I think it's a bit cooler.
It's cooler.
You're referring to the one with like you're in a speeder on Jakku, right? And you're looking around and...
Yeah, exactly.
This one is leaps and bounds. But then again, it's like very OT in the fact that, you know, you come out of hyperspace into an area and you're in an X-Wing and you're in a little squad here. And then you go deeper, you get something on your signal, and then you go deeper into investigate, and you come across a Death Star 1 being built and a firefight commences. But it is very, very cool.
Yeah, I love it. I think it shows you the capabilities these days, you know. I mean, it works really well on your cell phone.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
that's the only place I've seen it.
Scout 2 to Scout 3, do you copy? I'm getting Imperial comm chatter. You picking this up?
That's odd. This system is supposed to be empty.
I wonder what they're doing out here. Something's not right.
I think we should go in and have a closer look. Let's take some scans.
Roger. We get in, we get out.
Agreed. Plotting a jump in 3, 2, 1.
Star Destroyers! It's the whole blasted fleet!
You have a Corvus running?
Yep, I'm on it. What's the Empire doing out here?
What's that?
A space station?
It's too big to be a space station.
Watch your tail! Fighters coming in!
Redirect engine power to shield!
Switch your deflectors on! Evasive pattern now! Oh no. R4! Transmit those scans to Gavin! Do it now! Mon Mothma needs to know about this. Do we have confirmation? Did Yavin receive? There's too many ships! Can't plot the jump! What are we gonna do?
Rogue One Catalyst, just came out, and you told me that you're going to be listening to the audiobook, right?
Yeah, it actually, at the beginning of this call, I started downloading it as we began this call, and so probably following it, I'm going to start in on that latest offering in the novels. Now, I only get my novel content through Audible because it's just very convenient, and I can listen to it to and from work or when doing, you know, when working in the yard or whatnot. So I'm excited. So probably in the next week or two, should probably have that story under my belt, and I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be, I hear it's a pretty essential tie-in into the film.
Yeah, so that's what that is, right? It's a prequel to Rogue One.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So exciting. Yeah, maybe you could tell us next week how you liked it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, did you pick up The Force Awakens 3D?
I haven't been. It's been a very, very, very busy weekend, so I haven't even been out to the store as much since this week started, since Tuesday, with the official release of the Blu-ray in 3D. But I know that you did. How much of it have you listened to or watched?
I'm about halfway through with the commentary. And I gotta tell you, I wasn't really going to buy it because I don't have a 3D TV. And I went to the store in the morning and I actually picked up Finding Dory for my kids. Came out on the same day. And so I did pick up the Force Awakens Blu-ray, looked at it, and felt like, oh, it's not worth it. So I resisted, didn't buy it. And then later that day, I ended up again at Target, this time with the kids and my wife in tow. And I looked at it again, and I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm just going to get it. And
doesn't take anything, does it, really?
I mean, I resisted once. I just couldn't do it a second time.
You want this, don't you?
I have to tell you, though, I love the... So the reason I really wanted it, though, is because of the commentary, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
And the deleted scenes. And the deleted scenes are a super letdown. I gotta tell ya, they have 3 new deleted scenes on it. 2 are so short that it's really not worth watching at all. The only cool new scene is the one with Ankar Plutt, which a lot of people probably have seen on YouTube by now, where Chewbacca rips the arm out. I really wanted to see that, and it's a really cool scene. So anyways, but the deleted scenes were not that great, I thought, overall.
You know, and that's the thing, that when we got the first Blu-ray, that was one of the first signs where it was like, oh, I forgot. We're in a Disney era of Star Wars and not a Lucas era. Lucas, you know, put so much time and effort even into the DVD releases that he would complete scenes, even though he wasn't going to put them in the movies. But we know he did put stuff in the movies. But, you know, there was a lot more care and time taken with things like that. You know, they didn't have one commentary track. I mean, they had like 5 commentary tracks. So this is a little different beast. You know, we have to remember that, you know, as much as we love Star Wars, it is being filtered through the Disney machine, and Disney's, you know, putting out DVDs for, you know, all their franchises, the Marvel, the Pirates of the Caribbean, the Disney, the Princess, you know. So unfortunately, I think that is some of the things we lose with this era of Disney, is that, you know, so much detail being put into every facet of what we're used to in the Star Wars universe.
Absolutely. And, you know, the commentary track, I mean, it's really just J.J. Abrams talking the entire time. There's nobody else on it. But it doesn't bother me because he's, you know, I mean, he wrote the story basically, you know, with cast and together. But he knows what went into the thought process and he knows exactly why he did every scene the way he did it. So it's really, really insightful. And the commentary track is fantastic so far. Now, I haven't watched the whole thing yet, but I'm about halfway through and I really, really like it.
No, I'm looking forward to that as well.
But is it worth $30 if you already bought it last year? No, it's not. Absolutely not.
There's no new features other than the deleted scenes and the commentary.
You know, there might be. I haven't gotten to it yet.
You haven't done the comparison probably between the two yet.
I would say that if you have a 3D TV, go for it, absolutely. But if you don't, then...
This comes out, like the features come out on DVD or Blu-ray, right? Normal. The features aren't in Blu-ray, right?
That is correct, yeah.
3D, I mean. Okay, I'm going to pick it up for sure. But, you know, a sale might be what I'm looking for then at this point.
Yeah. All right. So before we head to the toy rundown of the news this week, I want to let you know that we're going to have Kim Simmons on the show a little bit later. Kim Simmons is the man who was responsible for most of the Kenner photography back in the early 80s to about mid 80s. And he's also done some Power of the Force 2 photography together with Shadows of the Empire and Episode 1. And so we'll talk to him about that experience and how he got into the job and how he got into photography and all that stuff. And helping me with the interview is our good friend Tom Burgess from the Galaxy of Toys podcasting network and from IGrewUpStarWars.com. So that's coming up, but before we head there, we're going to go to the toy rundown of the news.
Classified, really? Me too. Big secret.
In this week's toy rundown of the news, Walgreens has the exclusive Black Series 6-inch figure C-3PO on sale for $15 with your Walgreens card. Toys R Us has currently all 3¾-inch Star Wars figures and vehicles on sale for 20% off. Walmart has reduced the price of their Black Series 6-inch figures from $18.84 to $16.82 of each. The Black Series 6-inch figures have yet again shown up at Ross stores for the great price of $8.99. Unfortunately, the figure found had inadequate paint applications, so be careful and inspect those figures before buying. The Toys R Us exclusive Versus 2-pack with Cassian Andor and a basic Stormtrooper has been found across the nation. Make sure to check that out next time you're at Jeffrey's store. And finally, Gentle Giant has revealed Greedo will be their next figure in their Kenner Jumbo 12-inch figure line. Greedo will be packaged in the Kenner Power of the Force inspired packaging along with a collector coin. And that's this week's toy rundown of the news.
Our special guest today on Toy Run is Mr. Kim David McNeil Simmons, aka the man who shot Luke Skywalker. Kim, together with Roy Frankenfield, are responsible for bringing us the iconic Star Wars action figure photography from the Kenner days. Through his photography, he created the worlds beyond the movies that we all wanted to play in as children. He is here today so that we all can learn more about Kim, his photography, and his time working on taking pictures of Star Wars toys. We're honored to have him, so thank you for coming on the show, Kim.
Oh, thank you.
Now, let's go back all the way to the very beginning. What got you started with photography and how old were you?
I think I was in the third grade and I started carrying a Kodak Brownie into just take it to school, as I remember it. That's the earliest thing. I've had a camera in my hands off and on most of my life after that. It just kind of skipped around in high school because I discovered girls.
Sure. You know. That happens to everybody, Ken.
Yeah, I know it does. You know.
And Kodak Brownie. I think I remember those. Those were already.
It was a little box camera, is what it was. It was black and black and gray, I believe, is what it was. It was a little piece of plastic, is all it was.
You still have any of those by any chance? You still have your old Kodak Brownie?
No, I don't have that one.
Ah.
No. Don't have that.
We're talking about pre-cell phone times. Right.
Oh, jeez.
You can go back to the let's see, that would have been late 50s.
So we're talking pre-touchpad or not. We're definitely talking rotary phone here, Chris.
It was all rotary phone.
Yeah, yeah. Good times.
I can remember the first, well, at least for our house, it was the Princess phone. Basically, it was a push-button phone. I think that's what it was. Yeah. I'm not sure. I don't remember exactly. I just remember everything was rotary.
So, but it started very early for you, and that's something that you were so passionate about. You kind of kept taking pictures, and you took your cameras with you wherever you went, and then you actually went to study photography, right?
Yes, I was supposed to become a doctor. My father was a doctor, and I always say, just to let's skip around this real quick, is that I just skipped the medical school and went straight to the hobby that most doctors had, which was photography.
That's great.
And so, yeah. So, but yeah, when I was down in Florida, that's when I decided, I was just not going there. I was not going to medical. And I decided, okay, I'm going to throw into photography, and didn't know where I was going to end up. But basically, I had a pretty good teacher at what is now called University of Central Florida. This is after I went to 2 years. I worked full time while I was going to school. I was a little older at that point. I'd already had a year and a half under my belt up here at Heidelberg College in Ohio. And I ended up going down to Florida and took some time off. Basically, worked at Disney World.
Oh,
and so
you're an ex-cast member then?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, I am. I worked there for 6 years. A little over 6 years, I think.
So what did you do at Disney World? Because I have to ask you, because I used to work at Disney World as well. I was only there for a year and a half as an international kind of cast member working over at Epcot Center.
Well, Ep wasn't there when I was there.
Okay, so it was just the Magic Kingdom back then.
All it was. That's all it was. I drove the ferry boats back and forth for a number of years. Then I one summer, because that was a really bad year. I think that's when the gas crunch was going on, the first gas crunch. I was at Calkin Kennel. They tried to move me into the kingdom at that point, but I had just started back to school at Valencia College, two-year college at that point. I wanted to catch up everything. And I went up to the guy, to the head of the department. I said, operations. I just started school. He said, oh, well then, Kim, we'll put you over here at Calkin Kennel here for a while, and which isn't even there anymore, I don't think.
Right.
And that's how one summer I was doing that. And then, then I was back on the boats for a while, and then I went over to the launches. That's where the launches that would go between the. At that time, it was just from the Magic Kingdom to Fort Wilderness to the different hotels.
Sure.
And then I went to the electrical pageant for a while, and I also went to the I worked on the boats basically.
Okay.
And it was a watercraft is what they called it.
Huh.
And I don't know what they do it now, but. But I also did the world cruise during the daytime and the moonlight cruise at night. That was those were real steamboats.
Yeah.
They were then, let's put it that way.
Right.
Because you had an operating steam engine, not diesel. I mean, it was all real.
Mm-hmm.
So then definitely not being pulled through an underwater track or anything like that.
Definitely not. Definitely.
Not. No, gotcha. No.
And, when I was going to school, I had to, I basically worked a full 40 hour plus a week. And most of the time almost all the whole time I was there, I was basically working at night, in the afternoon, evenings, eventually tonight, because I ended up driving the buses at night. That was for the employee back and forth stuff. Okay. Or no, excuse me, it wasn't just the employee. That was part of it. It was also going to the different hotels that Disney operated. We had the buses that went around.
Sure.
And so I could, I'd get off at 3 o'clock in the morning or 2:30, I should say, and be at school at 8:30 or 8 o'clock in the morning and go for, how long I had to stay at the university. And then I'd get a few more hours of sleep, and then I'd do whatever I needed to do for school assignments, whatever. And I carried a camera during work hours too.
Wow. Sure, that lended itself for quite a few
It worked.
Great pictures in the Disney area there.
Yes, it did.
It's a pretty good environment to take pictures for sure.
Oh yes, I was never inside the kingdom. I was always outside. So it was fun. The only thing I didn't do was I never drove the trams into the parking lot.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they still have those.
Yes, I know they do. Yeah, I know they do have those. and I didn't do the monorails. I was never a monorail person. I was always on the water or on the buses. Those things. So that was where I was. But then from there, I wanted to go to grad school. Met my wife when we were going to university. It was that time. It was called FTU. They changed the name when we graduated. We had a choice to one: FTU or University of Central Florida.
Is that where you got your master's degree then, Kim? Or
no, that's where I got my undergraduate degree.
Oh, okay.
And then we came back up to Ohio, because I'm from Ohio, and came back up to Ohio and went to OU in Athens. And I was there for 2 years, and that's where I got my master's. My wife got two more degrees. So.
Oh, wow.
Oh, nice.
Good stuff.
So when you graduated, what year was that then? Was that the first job that you looked for after you graduated? Was that the one that you ended up meeting Roy Frankenfield?
Well, I guess we got out of school the spring of 81, and you still have to do your thesis, so I still had that to do. But basically, that's when I left. And then I started looking for a job. And, you know, what do you do, really, other than I planted a garden at my mother's house where we stayed?
Yeah.
Huge house. And so we, you know, my mother was running all over the place. So we were basically taking care of the house, and I planted a huge garden. And I was going around to the different design studios, because they didn't teach us at that time about the business aspect of what to do. Mm-hmm. And the last thing I wanted to do was wedding and portraits. That's not my forte.
Right.
Yeah, that's just not what I wanted to do.
Now, because you say you weren't looking for doing portrait pictures or photography, were you interested in toy photography then? Is that something that you specifically looked for?
Well, no, not really. It was kind of like, I need a job.
Right.
I need a job. And I've got a wife, and we have our kid, and you know, you got to support those two, you know, you got to do that. Although she was working too. So, but basically, I was in at a design studio, going from one to the other, because I didn't know. I was showing my portfolio that I'd put together at graduate school, and went into this what is at the time was LPK. What became LPK in the future. And the designer, one of the graphic designers there, I guess he was probably one of the principals, said, you need to go see Frankie. Well, Frankie was Roy Frankenfield. He said he needs a lot of help because he's in trouble and he needs help. I said, oh, okay. So I took the information and I called Roy. I think he called him too. And I called him up and he said, yep, come on in here. So I went in, and after that, I just said, look, I'll sweep your floors for $75 a week. I just need a job. And right. And he's basically going, okay, let's see how it works out. I'll give you $100. So he called me that night. He said, I'll give you $100 a week and to start out, and we'll see how you go. And we'll give it a couple of weeks to see how you do. Said, okay. Well, I walked in and I was met with my first shot, which is basically the Darth Vader insert. And basically, I'd never, this is honest to God's truth, and I've never seen an 8x10 sheet of film before, let alone loaded one up. And he said, well, there, you know, this, we're going to be shooting 8x10, so hey, go load up the film. Okay. Talk about nerves. And, you know, that was it. So did it. He liked it. And I basically, you know, he'd always say we'd be back in the back in the dark room doing, doing some codalists for different projects that we'd be doing. He said, well, as long as we keep getting these, you've got a job. This is the bread and butter.
So obviously he was working with Kenner already on this stuff. Had you seen Star Wars by that time already, or was that something you weren't familiar with?
Now, this will blow you away. This is really honest to God's truth. I was at Disney World, still at Disney World, and a friend of mine, a girl that I worked with, she said, "Kim, we're going out tonight." I go, what do you mean? He said, "Well, we're going to the movies tonight." So I said, "Well, I don't have time to do that. That's just not my thing." She said, "Yeah, we're going." Okay. And there's not a girl I dated. She was just a good friend. And she knew that I was constantly working, or I was working at school or working at Disney, or there was not a lot of free time for me. But next thing I know, we're at this drive-in and we're watching Star Wars, and I'm going, "Oh, okay, that's the movie." I go, "Oh, that's a good movie. I like that. That's kind of cool. That's all right, you know." And then that got to get back to work. Didn't worry about it after that. I did not see all the phenomenon that everybody else was seeing because basically my schedule was just not there for that.
Right. Probably mm-hmm. sounded like you're too busy to really appreciate that.
Well, then, you know, like we were up at grad school, because I think we saw it just before. I don't know. I can't tell you when it came out, but I know we saw it. Anything coming to Athens, it had to be late. If you've ever heard of Athens, Ohio, it's a small town.
Well, if that's anything like Lewiston, Idaho back in the 70s, I can relate.
There you go. Okay, there you go. There you go. If they didn't have the university, they didn't have anything.
Yeah.
That's it. So, yeah, we saw it there. Scott, our son, he saw it, and we all three of us went, "Wow, this is kind of cool. Okay." And then, okay, that's a good one. Okay. Then that's it. Next thing I know is, I mean, like I said, I'm with Roy and find out that what he's having a lot of trouble with was this Star Wars account, the Kenner account. You know, Roy would always go up, and I loved Roy. Roy was he was great. He really was a great guy. I don't want to take anything away from him. I can't, because he taught me a lot. I mean, grad school is great. They teach you most everything that you want to know. But Roy taught me the business side, and I just applied my technical stuff that I'd learned that he had never gone through. So, you know, it wasn't common for me to just, I do calculations, I do things in my head, and he'd just shake his head and go, "How in the hell did you do that?" But it was fun. We made a good team. We really did. I worked for Roy for 7 years, so it was good. And till I bought him out is what happened.
Okay. But, oh, is that what happened? Okay.
That's what happened. That's what happened. But you know, we basically as soon as I started, I just took off. And as soon as Roy realized that I was comfortable doing what I never needed to be done, then he was able to relax. Now Roy was in his 60s by that time, so and I can appreciate that now. Letting some whippersnapper come in and do all the work while he sits back in his office and collects it.
What year would you say that you and Roy parted ways?
Parted ways in 88. I bought the studio in basically made it final on July 4th of 88.
Oh wow, okay. That's okay. Much longer. That's much further out than I would have expected. So, interesting.
Yeah. Well, you know, I had to, you know, Roy was, I won't say control freak. He was making some decent money. I mean, I was still making, by that time I was making basic $5, call it $5 an hour. And at that time, and basically, we made an arrangement that for me to purchase the studio, I was to receive a certain percentage of every job that I did, and that he would hold on, just write a check for it, or so, and I just put it in the bank, above and beyond my check, my weekly check. But basically, my basic check was anywhere $200 to $250 a week. That was it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's the way it worked.
So when you started doing the photography, was that then all done in the photo studio with Roy, or did you ever go to the Kenner location or the Kenner building and shoot anything there?
No, every now and then we'd have a job. We'd go up and we'd shoot up the Kenner building, or actually the Kroger building.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It was the Kroger building. We'd go up every now and then, very rarely, but that was only very few times. But mostly I'd go up and pick up product from the sample department or from the the art director we were dealing with up there. But most of the time, that would be the sometimes stuff. The normal was to go to the design studio and pick up the product and whatever, the toys, whatever needed to be done. Or Roy would just go over and pick them up, bring them back, and he'd brief me on it. That's usually what happened at the beginning. Roy would go over to the design studio, pick up, he'd get the briefing, come over and tell me, and then I'd just have it done, and then he'd take it back.
So your studio was also in Cincinnati then?
Oh yeah. Okay. It was basically down the block.
Oh wow, okay.
It was like not even a full block away.
Definitely convenient then.
Oh yeah. And we were maybe, I don't know, we were on 6th Street, and I think they were like 11th to 12th. No, I don't think they were 12th Street. So they weren't that far away. Kenner wasn't. So it wasn't that far.
Oh, that's interesting, because I was wondering what the secrecy was like back then. Because when you joined in 81, 82, mm-hmm. right? Star Wars was a big thing already.
It was, but you know what? Nobody was worried about secrecy. Or, I mean, if they did, I didn't know about it because I never talked about it to anybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, my son would know things, but in fact, because I'd use him as a hand model every now and then. I paid him the same amount I would pay anybody else, so it didn't make any difference. Roy did. Whatever somebody else was getting, I insisted that's the way it had to be. Because mm-hmm. he would be the age that where it would work until obviously he got too old.
That's definitely kind of an interesting little bit of trivia, your son being the quote-unquote hand model for a lot of the packaging and that kind of thing.
Not too many. It wasn't too many. Just a few.
Yeah, okay.
Then my brother came up with his family. I know I used my nephew on the Wampa box. He's the one, the little hand that's in there.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Yeah.
So I won't say his name because that would embarrass him someplace. So
yeah, we don't want anybody looking them up on Facebook or anything. People are fans are kooky like
sending boxes for autographs.
Yeah. Now he would probably think, "What the heck is going on?" Yeah. But you know, I had a blast doing this. Even though I wasn't making a lot of money, I really wasn't. I mean, at $5 an hour, even in the 80s, you're not making, that's not much money for then. In fact, I think I was making almost that at Disney. No, not quite. It was a little bit under that at Disney.
You know, we heard a lot of stories from ex-Kenner employees that there was a lot of crazy deadlines and they were constantly under pressure to get the product out. Did you experience anything like that, working late and working the weekends?
Yes, that's why I said my base pay was $5 an hour. And that when during those times, I exceeded that a lot. I mean, I was going in on Saturdays to do shoots. They'd need things by Monday, and they wouldn't give it to us till 4 o'clock on Friday.
Mm-hmm. Would they give you a kind of an idea like we've got this toy, this is where it's, you know, it's on a ice planet? Would they give you ideas on what to do, or would they give you specifics on how to actually what they want in the shoot or in the photograph?
A lot of it was, you know, I want this to be it's a snow scene, Kim, and we're putting mountains in the ground background, or it's an indoor scene. So there's got to be like a jungle, you know, redwoods or whatever in the background.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. You had that kind of guidance when you were doing that. Okay.
You had to, because there had to be a central control, and that's always the design studio. The guys that I worked with, I didn't really work with the art director at the design studio that much. Not after the beginning. It was mostly with the production guys. Jeff Rice, I can say that. Jeff Rice was the primary guy I dealt with, or Bob Weil. But boy, it was, those two guys were dynamite. We had a really good relationship making things happen.
Mm-hmm. So deadlines, as far as that goes, they would tell you, this is what we want. We want this AT-AT sitting in a redwood forest. And you'd come and pick up the toys, and then they would expect that in a few days to come back with the photography, or would they give you a little bit more time to finesse the shot a little bit?
It's very rare that we'd have a couple of days.
Okay, is it really quick?
It generally was within, as I remember it was basically you'd have within a day to 48 hours. You know, I was known very, I mean, I was a Polaroid king. I used Polaroids.
And gotcha.
Before I would shoot the final, I would literally have it set, shoot the Polaroid. I mean, we're that close. I'd run a Polaroid over to them, and they'd bless it. They'd say, yep, that's it. Good, go. Okay, then I'd go back, and I'd shoot the film and be done. And 2 hours later, I'd have the film. And after that, because I was very hard on my lab, too. And I'd say, I need this in 2 hours. And they'd get it back to me within 2 hours.
Wow. So that was a very, very quick turnaround. Interesting. I never really realized that when you're sitting there looking at a box.
Wow. No. I mean, sometimes I had a couple of days. I mean, on Hoth battle scene, I mean, I had, when I get it done, I get it done.
Right.
But then as it was on that, it was a week. I spent about a week on it because Roy was on vacation. He came back and he said, oh, wait a minute, we got to get everything, you know, he wanted everything tack sharp, and which was unusual for him. And but I'd already been through it. And I said, well, good luck, because you're not going to get it. I knew it because it was my lens, my personal lens I was using, and it wasn't meant for an 8x10, but it's the widest lens I had. And I know it's all technical stuff for you guys, but anyway, it wouldn't do any tilts and swings as much as Roy wanted to do it. But it had already been blessed, it had already been approved, and it was already gone. He wanted to put his fingerprints on it, and it was already blessed.
Okay. See, one thing I always loved about the photography was the back of the action figure cards, right? Those group shots of all the figures. Is that something that you came up with, or is that, you know, for me, that was always a checklist as a child, you know?
Is
that something that, you know, that they said, okay, we want to have you use a yellow background for that?
They did come up with that, because they were like, well, I think we're going yellow. Okay, fine. And I'm going like, man, these things laying out, that's pretty, as I remember it, okay, and maybe I'm wrong, but as I remember it, it was like, can I build something up to where you're not going, looking at up a ladder 8 feet, looking down on a table, and they're all, you know, in a row like this, and you got these guys in the way in the background where you can't really see them very well. But if we kind of get them on a stair step kind of that thing, I'll be able to pull them closer together, and they'll all be right there. And they'll be, the front guys will be almost as tall. They'll be almost the correct size to the guys in the back line, back row. Mm-hmm. Well, you got to build it, Kim. Okay.
Oh, that's a good point, because there's definitely foreshortening and perspective that you have to consider. I didn't even realize that until now. Wow.
I worked it out, and I did it, and I built them, and then I looked around for materials, and I got the right material, and then I took it over there to them, and I said, okay, here's the materials, which one do you like the best? And they picked out the Forsythia yellow. That basically, it's a Forsythia yellow that when we had it on paper, except this cloth material Forsythia yellow, kind of the color of it. Didn't turn brownish like the paper did.
Very interesting.
Interesting. Yeah. Not knowing that millions and millions of kids would be looking at your artwork, planning their next trip to Kmart.
You know, that never occurred to me. It never.
It occurred to me, Kim. It occurred to me.
Yeah, I'm finding that out. That was the shopping list right there.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
Worldwide, you know.
Yes, I know. Yeah. I know.
The Force is back. The Rebels won't tire till they see the last of the Empire. And Kenner's there with Star Wars Return of the Jedi Collection.
I'm going to feed you to Sarlacc Pit, Skywalker.
Plateau, Weequay, Luke Skywalker, and Lando Calrissian, each sold separately.
Prepare the plank, Weequay. Surprise, surprise, I'm Lando in disguise. Let's get out of here, Luke.
Whoa, the plank is falling. Help!
Plateau, Weequay, Luke Skywalker, and Lando Calrissian action figures, each sold separately from Kenner's Star Wars Return of the Jedi Collection.
Jack Wehmeyer is the one that shot the original figures on the back of the card, of the ones that have backgrounds.
Oh, sure. Yeah. The 12 back, 20 back, 21 back runs. And
Those were the ones that Jack Wehmeyer, he was a food shooter here in Cincinnati.
Really?
Yes. He was not, he was not a Well, he did his share of toys. Everybody in town did something for Kenner at one point in time or another. But it's like P&G. Everybody got a something from P&G. But Jack was a food shooter. That was what he was known for. And the art director gave him this. Well, push came to shove, and I guess all of a sudden it started ballooning up. Roy was already doing the toys, I think, at the same time. But the faction figures, they wanted backgrounds initially. Well, then they realized how big it was going to get, and they could no longer do those. They think that's the way it went.
That sounds about right, yeah. I mean, doing backgrounds for 100 figures would just kill you.
Yeah, it would definitely. And trying to be unique about them, too. And then trying to put them on the back of a card.
Just makes sense to put them all on one background, absolutely.
I knew Jack really well. Roy farmed me out to him a couple of times. So I did work with Jack. He also did our color printing. His son did all the, whenever we needed color prints for Billy Ellison to airbrush, it would go to his son Jackie, to print up. Right there in the studio. So I got to know him really well. I still know Jackie very well. And if I'd known that at the time, because it never put it together till afterwards, that Jack had done these, I would have said, hey, Jack, what are you going to do with all this Star Wars stuff that you've got? I know you've got all this film, and he did. I could have asked him for it. I'd have had all his, too, because from him, it went straight to the dumpster.
And so
nobody knew about him. Nobody went dumpster diving.
That's heartbreaking.
Yeah, that's tough.
I was wondering, you know, with all the Kenner toy commercials that were out there, were you ever involved in creating those as well? Did they ever come to you for guidance or on how to set something up?
No. Those guys are serious pros. Not that the still photography wasn't pro work, but once you go into that realm, for a 30-second commercial, they probably had a couple of hours worth of tape on the floor, or film on the floor, however you want
right,
to.
Right, right.
And they trust me, those guys, they were you talk about days. I can't see them ever doing one of those commercials in a day or day and a half. There's no way.
Yeah, the editing process, of course, is, you know, everything's digital now. You throw it on a computer, you can cut it up in a few hours, and you're good to go. But the process back then, as with photography, was just a much slower process. So, yeah.
I mean, think about it for a second. At that time, even tape, even videotape, VHS, beta, whichever one you want to talk about, that was still kind of new. And I don't even know if they'd been using that in the TV world. I don't know. Maybe they were. I mean, it might have been film. You know, it's 35 millimeter film, whatever. It could easily have been. You know, it's good. Our good overlap at that point. Depend on their budget.
Very interesting. Now, the Return of the Jedi. I mean, Empire and the original Star Wars was out when you started taking these photographs, but right. Jedi had not come out yet. When you got the first Jedi figures, did that kind of spoil the movie for you then?
No, good God, no. So you can tell me the next, when Rogue One comes out, you could tell me the ending. And it talked to me about the whole movie. It's like, okay, fine. Now when I go to watch it, oh, that's really cool. You can tell me a whole movie, but see, I'm playing it in my mind, but, oh, I didn't realize that's what you were talking about. Oh, okay, cool. Man, this is cool. That's all I do.
Uh-huh.
My son's very weird about that. He says, I've already seen it. You got to see this movie. I said, well, just tell me about it. Oh, I can't. You'll ruin it for you. Said, no, you're not going to ruin it for me. Nothing ruins it for me. Okay. You know?
Well, that's a good thing, I guess, you know.
Yeah, I enjoy the movies for what they are. They're entertainment. I really enjoy really good entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Now, looking back at all the photography that you've done for Kenner Star Wars, is there a favorite photo shoot that you remember? Anything in particular that stood out to you or that you're maybe especially proud of?
The Hoth battle scene, that POV that I did.
Yeah.
That I really created because if you saw, ever could see what I was given, and they said, look, we need something like this. Now the art director I dealt with was Mark Castader. And he kind of modified it as he went, as I gave him a Polaroid. He said, no, Ken, we want to do it this way. I said, well, you shouldn't have told me the way you you wanted it different, but yet you wanted it similar. You know, it's kind of like, wait a minute, you can't have it both ways. and so it's basically, it was building, it was a building process, because I was told flat out, first off, it's going to be a tabletop, Jim. I'm going on vacation. You can take care of this. No big deal. You need me around here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I put it on the tabletop, and that didn't last long. It took up the entire studio. The studio was 18 feet wide. I think it took up just about, I had paper going left to right, almost 18 feet, and at the back. And the camera was on the floor. I always thought it was upside down, but I found a picture. It was literally on its side on the floor. So it basically went back like a V, the whole scene. So it was, I built it slowly but sure. I had to figure out how I was going to hang the X-Wings. I did not have an official toy of the Rebel Transport. So all I had was the prototype that I had. Mm-hmm. And it was hard. It was heavy. So I had to figure out how to hold it up. And I did. I basically made a lattice work above the whole scene. And, like, you know, your ceiling panels are held onto for a lot of businesses. So I
built
a lattice work up there, and I had helping to hold it as a strengthening, going side to side. And it was, like, I just kept hoping to say, please don't fall, don't fall, don't fall. And as I would go, I would light, look back on the camera, light it, look it back on the camera, light some more. And it was really funny because I was like, okay, I think I'm ready for the guy if he wants to come down. His name was Terry Bernard. He was the man I was doing it for at the time. And he said, come on, you know, he's call me when you're ready. I said, well, I'm ready. Come on down. He looked at it. He says, man, I really like this. This is cool. But he says, one thing I'd like to change. What's that? He reached up to the one light, this massive light that I had. It turned it off. And he says, there's your shot, Kim. And after my eyes adjusted, I go, oh, yeah, you're right. Because, you know, you get used to working with something, and all of a sudden it's like, because you don't turn that one light off, because that was the light for me to see everything.
Is that giving you some harder shadows and that kind of thing then, or?
Because the way I had it on diffusion, but so I had something in front of it. But yeah, everything was giving me a little harder shadows. But at the same time, you're looking at it and being diffused, it kind of wasn't as bad. But as soon as he turned it off, I'm like, oh, geez. So lesson learned.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite pictures of yours, quite honestly. I love that battle scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely one that I remember as well. Great stuff.
Yeah, that's my baby. I've always liked that. And then anything with the micros. I love the micros. So
what makes those interesting, do you think? What did you like about those? The fact that they were maybe smaller or easier to film or easier to shoot or?
Well, no. You could work. Things were a lot just smaller, and being smaller, you definitely didn't want to blow them up too big. Because then I could see every flaw in them. trust me, you do. But it was, I like the size. I really like the size. And it didn't take up so much room. And I could imagine kids playing with those and having a blast with them, but unfortunately I was wrong. But,
see, you know. Chris, what were we talking about on the last show?
I know.
Yeah, so.
But I talked to them when they had this Kenner reunion thing here in Cincinnati this last year. It was like, you know, why did you guys market it right? And they said, well, you know, we just didn't think about that. They marketed it to little kids, but it should have been marketed to the little older generation. I believe. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I think the folks that grew up with the green army men, the plastic army men, and then even going further back with the tin soldiers and that kind of thing, I think that would appeal to some of the older collectors rather than the younger collectors for sure.
Yeah, and I had both the tin soldiers and the plastic, so yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
Now, you mentioned that you purchased the studio in 1988, but the Kenner Star Wars line ended in 85, 86. When did you notice that the whole thing was kind of dying down?
Well, when all I was getting was the cartoon characters, Ewoks and droids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Where's the other guys? Where are they at? Well, yeah, you know, I'd had Boba Fett and I had the A-wing pilot because they were the same. But it's like, where are these other guys at? Come on. I mean, I didn't know the story. I had nothing. It was just like, there it is. And it's part of the game. He said things don't go on forever, Kim. I said, okay,
then absolutely.
We did other things that went on. I did Bone Age too. So,
with that, what other Kenner toy lines did you photograph after, or during, or?
Well, listen, when I was doing that, the Star Wars line during those years. There was hardly any time for anything else. If they'd pop something in, it never rung a bell with me. I know I did Chuck. After Star Wars, in that lull,
mm-hmm.
I did Chuck Norris line. I thought that was kind of cool because I was like Chuck Norris. And I had them. I think I just sent all the last of my, because I had the prototypes. I had all of them. I sent those down to Tom Derby to sell.
Okay. There you go.
Didn't want them. I did a little bit. Then I did Bone Age, which I thought was absolutely fantastic. But I can't get excited about toy line. I could never. I learned a lesson right there. You know, it's like they canceled. They canceled the Star Wars line. I was getting excited, and all of a sudden it died. Okay, Chuck Norris. I thought it was gonna be dynamite. I thought it was pretty kind of cool, and it died. Of course, I saw the Octagon and I realized why. then it was Bone Age, and I thought, man, this could really go places because they spent 18. For I was told they Kenner engineers spent 18 months working on the connectors to put those together. And I was shooting the, I think it was one of the last ones, and they said, well, it's dead, Kim. They've already killed it. What do you mean they killed it? They said it's dead. It's going to go on the shelves, but it's dead. I go, why? I mean, it's a great concept. You've got this great toys. He said, there's no storyline. I said, well, get a writer in here and write a storyline.
Yeah, whip up some comics or something. Come on.
Anyway. Yeah, but it was a great, I thought it was good. I'm still now, I'm going back trying to locate the packaging for that. I'm not worried about the Chuck Norris line. I love that. That was kind of cool. But the Bone Age, I don't know. I don't think they did. Well, they don't think they did too much of the Chuck Norris. I don't think much of that other than the figures. And they
yeah, I don't think I never heard of Bone Age, but I was familiar with the Chuck Norris line. And of course that didn't last all that long.
No, I think they had the car and that's as far as they went because they had two motorcycles and a helicopter. But the helicopter never made it, neither did the car, the motorcycles.
Chuck Norris, Karate Commandos.
Bring it up, crack it down, fight forces of evil wherever they're found.
Figures sold separately.
Location, Tibet. Assignment, recover stolen microchip. Protecting it was Super Ninja.
Hi-ya!
First, Kimo stood up to him.
Hi-ya!
And was downed. Then Reed Smith flew in.
Hi-ya!
And was grounded. But now it's his karate against mine.
Hi-ya!
Chuck Norris Karate Commandos. Chuck Norris, Super Ninja, Reed Smith, Kimo, and other figures sold separately. New from Kenner.
I think after Star Wars, they were just trying to throw anything at the wall to see if it would stick.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. They should have come out with that line like 4 or 5 years ago. There was a resurgence in Chuck Norris all over the place, I thought, you know.
Yeah, they should have brought it out. But, yeah. Hey, you know, that's the way it goes.
Yeah. But, you know, despite that, you kept a relationship with Kenner, right? And then even later with Hasbro.
Oh, yeah. Well, by that time, see, I think, I don't know the year. I can't remember. Before that Kenner moved up to Elsinore, that's the street, and where they were before they left to go to Pawtucket. I had a call from the art director that I knew, and he said, Kim, I need Star Wars transparencies. What do you got? I said, well, what do you want? I got it all. He says, I need bring me up some stuff. Make it a good selection of stuff that was ever done. I said, okay. When do you want me to come up? He says, call me when you're ready. So I gave him a little more time, but next day I called him up, said, I've got him. He said, come on up. So he sat there and he's going through these 4x5s and he says, I need these. I don't know how many of him took. And he says, okay, how much for each one of them? And I made him a very sweet deal because he said, we're going to go make a presentation to Lucas for the next movie. So I said, cool. So they're in the process. Very good.
Wow.
And so I made him a very sweet deal and then promptly forgot about it. And that's what you do. But he didn't forget about me. Those guys didn't. So when things started, I mean, I'd get a little bit here and there, but that was my dry time. And that was by then that we're in the 90s there. And then all of a sudden, you know, I started getting little things here and there. Then the guy I was sharing a studio space with was working on some castle of some sort. And that same art director came in, talked to him for, they worked a little bit. Then as he came out, he says, hey, Kim, I'll talk to you. Sure. He says, pulled out a Polaroid. He was all ready for this. He said, pulled out a Polaroid. He says, how close can you get to this? I want this done. Sure. So I took her. Now this time I did take a couple of days cause I had to create the set. And, that was the ATST. And, gave it to him. And he says, okay. He says, he took the rest of the photographs that I took. That was from that point on, I was working directly with him, not going through the design studio.
Hmm.
And we kept that relationship up till actually I just saw him at Home Depot yesterday. So,
oh, very cool. So what was your involvement then with the Shadows of the Empire and Episode One when that came out?
I did all the photography for Shadows, as far as I know I did. I did Power of the Force, except for a couple of months, and that's when he walked in. I think it started up. I didn't even know they were doing anything. So I think I missed a couple of... I know I missed a couple of the spaceships.
So the AT-ST was kind of the kickoff back into the Star Wars line.
That's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That was the kickoff for me.
Nice.
As far as I know, I did this. From that point on, I did all the rest of the Power of the Force, too.
So, Kim, you're known in the Star Wars collecting community as the man who shot Luke Skywalker.
Yep.
How did that name come about?
There was an author. They did an article on me in the Star Wars Galaxy magazine. A guy by the name of Bob Woods. He wanted to do something on me, and I guess he had the blessings of, obviously, Star Wars people, Lucas and, obviously, Kenner. And he named me. He just pulled that name, put that name together. And I go, wow. When the came time later on, I just, wow, I'm just going to use that name. But except putting space between the words, I just run it together. And kind of makes that unique in its own way.
Rolls off the tongue for sure.
It's catchy. Yeah, very catchy.
The guy was good. And I did a couple of, I did at least one more cover for him. And that wasn't a cover. It was an inside shoot. But he told me that was probably the most popular issue with that, if they had the picture in it. Not the one that I did, but the one that had the actual Hoth battle scene. And it was the most popular one they'd ever done. And then this article talked about me doing it and other things. And then...
I think they had a few behind-the-scenes kind of shots with you. Yes. Didn't they have those in the article?
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
Roy's, I remember that one. Roy's daughter was... She'd pop in while he was on vacation. She'd come in, and I just said... While I'm working, I said, here. I handed her the camera, and I said, it's all set. All you got to do is focus and shoot. I just need... documentation, because I'm thinking this is going to be one heck of a thesis, centerpiece for thesis. I hadn't done it yet. I kept getting extensions, and because I just needed something to hold it all together, and that just did it.
I wanted to ask you, Kim, how do you feel about your notoriety in the Star Wars universe now? How does that make you feel when people come up to you and at conventions and that kind of thing and tell you, hey, that you know you helped form my childhood with the great stuff you've shot for Kenner?
It's got to be humble about it. I mean, because I'm unofficially represent, you know, at that point I'm unofficially representing Disney, unofficially representing Hasbro and Lucas and all that.
Right. Yeah.
And you know, and I tell you, I've worked for Disney, I've worked for Hasbro and Kenner. They're both fantastic. They truly are fantastic companies to work for, to work, you know, be doing work for, in Kenner's and Hasbro's case. But they're great companies. So it's like the last thing I'd ever want to do is shine a bad light on them in any way, shape, or form. Because they people there that treated me nicely were good to me, and they're both great companies. So, you know, why would I want to do anything negative? So yeah, I have to always watch what I say. In terms
right.
of,
oh yeah,
sure.
Make sure there's bad language there, Kim. Yeah. you know, I mean, that's just one of the things you got to do, and that I enjoy it. I enjoy it. The people. I now going to the few of the conventions that we do go to, the cons or whatever. It's I really truly enjoy the people and watching the people. I get to meet the people. I mean, we had this the Cincinnati Comic Expo here in, I think it was the end of September, I think, and I lose track of time real quick. And I had I made up of something special before the guy who ran the operation that put it on, promoter. He had me do an illustration using the figures of the people, of the actors who were going to be there. So I used the figures, like, you know, Peter Mayhew. Well, he was Chewbacca. So Billy Dee Williams is Lando. You know. David Prowse, and I actually even my mind just went blank on Darth Maul, the guy who played Darth Maul.
Ray Parks.
Yeah, I mean, dynamite guy. He was a blast to talk to, and I got to talk to all these guys. I mean, granted, some of them didn't really want to talk much, so that's okay. But I did get to talk to Billy Dee Williams and his manager for a while. Billy Dee's manager wanted to know. It was really kind of interesting. He's going like, man. He came over to the site, came over eventually to the booth, and he goes, "You shouldn't be here. You should be up there with us, and so that we can, you know, we can get the picture. People can get the picture from you of Peter Mayhew or Billy Dee or any of these guys, and they get the picture. That's the picture they want, and they can do it as the figure instead of the other ones." He said, "That's what you should be doing." I said, "Well, that's beyond my purview. I can't." You know, I can't. That isn't for me to decide.
It's a very nice gesture.
You know what? That might be something to consider. You know, if you were to go to conventions, that might be a great hook. Because I'm sure there are fans like Chris and I that would love to meet you if you were at a convention. Well, absolutely,
absolutely. Yeah, Celebration Orlando is coming up, Kim.
I know, but yeah.
Now Orlando will be. Specifically great. I mean, you could go back to Disney, you know.
Sure, they'd let you in one of those boats. You could steer it around for old times' sake. You know?
Only if the person knew me back then. I'm probably gone by now.
Yeah.
But yeah, they've off when we went to go back. I guess it was, I don't know when it was, back in the 90s. I guess it was. My wife and I went down there. It was a Photoshop seminar being held down there, and. Actually went on the boats again, and come on, Kim, take the wheel. I said, no, you do it. Come on. So no, that's too much responsibility there.
Yeah.
Been too many years since I've been away from the wheel.
It's like a bicycle. You get right back on it.
It'd be a bumpy ride for everybody else.
Yeah.
Now, Kim, before we let you go, could you talk a little bit about your website, themanwhoshotlukeskywalker.com? Could you tell people what they can find there, what they can, what you're offering on the website?
Well, we have all the images that Roy and I shot. Not all. I mean, there's a few images. I have to tell you this up front. When I was working on the micro collection, I went up to Roy and I said, "Roy, I need some more stands. I need a camera, extra cameras, because I don't have enough. I need to get moving." And he handed me the keys to the basement, says, "Go down. I've got some stuff down there." When I was down there, I found two trash. Not only did I find other cameras, which I needed, I also found two trash cans sitting in 2 inches of water in the basement. And that film was all the film that Roy had shot of the first move from the first Star Wars movie. And some of the Empire Strikes Back. So I got upstairs and I said, hey, Roy, all this film, do you mind if I keep it and try to bring it? He says, hey, you can have it. I don't care about it. It's yours. Just don't do it on my time. Do it on your own time. No problem. Like, of course, that doesn't hold its weight in water, really. So, you know, later on, I mean, I saved as much as I could. I did lose some film. I didn't know what I'd lost because some of it was they were sticking together. It wasn't really taken care of. So I took my time after work, whatever, cleaning up what I could, saving what I could. There's some film that was just too far gone. It was done. And some of it was damaged. And I still kept it, but it was most of the stuff was just, okay, that's where it was. So when I bought the studio, that's why one of the conditions was that when I offered to buy the studio from him, I said, I need to get the copyright from you. And he says, Kim, these things are worthless. What do you want all this stuff for? I said, well, I kind of like, if I'm buying the studio, I want to own all the work that you did and I did, and you're always going to get credit. Okay, all right, fine. So he said, we'll do it. It won't do you any good. It's kind of like, who wants this? Well, move forward. A lot of people want that stuff. And at first, I didn't want to get involved in it. I just thought, I'll let somebody else print it. Well, then I realized they were having too many problems in shipping, and I didn't like the quality that was coming out. So I had the printers. So I decided I'm going to print them myself. Well, that's where we are. And I also started dabbling creating my own art images, if you want to call it, space images, using the original photographs.
Mm-hmm.
And just for me to play. I just had to have something to play with. And that's it. And basically, that's our website. There's like, I think, over 1,200 images up there right now.
Oh, wow.
And as people...
The yearly calendar and that good stuff, too, is available, yeah?
Yep. I think we've still got a few left of those, the calendars for 2017. My wife is the one that actually chose all the images this time around. So I had very little to do with it, except... She says, which one of these do you like for the front of the cover? And obviously I chose the one that's there, the 12-inch dolls. 12-inch figures, excuse me. And
yeah, let's not call them dolls, please.
called action figure Kim, please. Yes.
But they're cool. I mean, I liked it. It's the site is, I try to offer them. Some things I can't go very large with. Some of them are, but at least I can give them an 8x10 of it, everything that's there. But there's some I can get. People like large prints. There's some of them that can go. I've sold 20x30s, 24x30s, 25x30. I make them large.
Well, it's great because every time when I see your photographs, it's like a time machine. So thank you for your efforts. You might not have You might not have realized what you were doing back then, but for sure it's something that we all admire, and it's literally like going back to the 80s. It's awesome.
So thank you.
You guys, you're the reason I'm continuing to do what I do.
All right, so thank you, Kim, for coming on the show, and thank you, Tom, for helping out with the interview. Let's head on over to the collector calendar.
On November 18th, Star Wars Identities will be starting a 10-month run at the O2 in London, England. If you haven't seen it, check it out. The Greater Seattle Toy Show will be held at the Kent Commons Community Center on November 19th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. in Washington State. On November 23rd, we will see the release of IG-88 as the next action figure variant cover from Marvel's Star Wars comic book series. Make sure to set your DVRs and your TiVos for the night of Thanksgiving, as ABC will be showing new footage from Rogue One. On November 29th, the next STARS meeting will take place from 7 to 10 at Applebee's in Tukwila, Washington. Collectors of all ages and types are welcome. And finally, friend of the show, Chris Hamilton, writes in to let us know that on December 3rd, the Star Wars Grand Florida Alliance will be holding their third annual Star Wars Swap Meet at Heroes Landing in Claremont, Florida. For more details, head on over to their Facebook page. And that's this week's Collector Calendar.
All right. Thank you goes to Tom Burgess for helping me with the interview with Kim Simmons. And we'll be back next Friday.
Well, that wraps another episode of Toy Run, the Star Wars action figure cast. For more information on all things Star Wars action figure related, check out FromForlomToZuckus.com. And for the internet's largest Star Wars action figure database, visit JediBusiness.com. And until the next episode,
peace.
And may the figures be with you.